You have just over 110,000 YouTube subscribers. 1 year ago, you had just under 16,000. So it's grown quite a bit.
I saw an opportunity and I think it paid off. It's really taken me like 10 plus years to find that balance and to like figure out how to do it with maintaining my like sanity.
So I wanted to ask, when you first started trying to actually build an audience, what was the thinking there?
Oh, I could talk about this for 10 hours.
If you could give any advice to a creator starting out in the space, what would you tell them?
Define your goals and define your audience. You don't need every single post to go viral. That doesn't have to be your goal.
Are there any revenue streams that you don't have that you would like to have?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Welcome back to the Creator Spotlight Podcast. My name is Francis Zier.
And I'm Natalia Perez Gonzalez.
And today we are speaking with Sydney Graham, a sewing-focused creator with over 600,000 followers across YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok. So, Sydney, as we speak, you have just over 110,000 YouTube subscribers. And 1 year ago, at the start of June 2024, you had just under 16,000. So it's grown quite a bit. And I was looking at Social Blade, which tracks these kind of things, and it seemed pretty steady, but there were four spikes. And I looked into these months and what video got the most view in each month, and it seems each one is attributable to a specific video. So I want to start with the first one, June 2024. Okay. Mm-hmm. You brought in 5.4 thousand subscribers, which was a peak at the time. You've brought in more month over month, but that was a peak at the time. And it seems related to a specific video that now has 91,000 views. I forget. How do you pronounce this brand? Ghani? Johnny?
Oh, Ghani?
Ghani. Okay. Well, that was totally wrong.
That's how I would say it.
Okay. Well, yeah. we'll say Ghani, but it's the title of this video is Ghani Tie Top Dupe Tutorial, Beginner Sewing Tutorial, Sew Along Sid Tie Top Pattern. So it seems pretty clear to me that this was like people looking up Ghani dupe tutorials, and this was like a hot item at the time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Definitely. So this tie top, if you're unfamiliar of its prestige, it is a very popular shirt. It's basically a shirt that has like a slit down the middle and there's three ties and it has a bit of like a peplum bottom. And I feel like fall of maybe 2023 was kind of when it's like launched or when it kind of started gaining popularity. And so there were a lot of like hacks and ways to make your own, because it's quite a simple shirt, really. Or at least I feel like it's pretty simple. So anyway, it started kind of gaining notoriety. I had made some of my own just in my, for me personally, you know, not teaching people how to do it. And then I created a pattern that is quite similar, but this pattern, as with all my other patterns, there are multiple variations, ways you can hack them, ways you can do different things with them. And so when I created my pattern, which I call the Sid Tie Top, I specifically made a video that would show you how to hack the Sid tie top into basically a replica of this Ghani tie top that is quite famous. And so I knew that people would be searching for it. I knew that they would be looking for it. And it felt like a great crossover, because not only can I show you how to make that exact one, but then you get the pattern where you can make a dress, a different style of shirt. You can add sleeves, you can take away sleeves and whatnot. So I saw an opportunity and I think it paid off.
So
well.
you haven't done, as I mean, maybe I'm missing one, but I don't think you've done really any of these other like using the name of the popular thing and then, you know, making a dupe tutorial. Like clearly that was a tactic that worked, but you haven't really done that since. Yeah.
Not so much on YouTube. I mean, I do a lot more like on TikTok, especially when I was getting started out, like before I even had my own business where I'm making patterns. That's kind of how I learned to sew, is just by seeing clothes, usually on Pinterest. I'll like find a garment, take a picture and be like, I could probably make that, and then figure it out. And so all my TikToks initially were kind of like, here's this shirt or here's this dress I like, and now I'm gonna like go for it and see how I can make it myself. But it was less educational, less like teaching people how to do it, and more like, this is me just figuring it out. So I feel like I do that more on TikTok. But you're right, I haven't done that a ton on YouTube. Maybe I should start doing it more.
I mean, it certainly worked.
Yes.
So another one, the next one that was a big spike was a while later, October 2024, it drove 9.5 thousand subscribers that month. And it seems attributable to a video titled Attempting to Sew My Fall Wardrobe in One Day Sewing Vlog, which now has 323,000 views and is your most popular video on YouTube, period, by like 40,000 views. This one, I feel like, is pretty, it's pretty clear. The title is like, oh, wow. Is she going to pull this off? No way. That seems impossible. tell us about that one and how you came up with that idea.
Yeah, that was literally, that's how I sew often, is like I'll see a day, an opportunity where I have a whole day where I can sew and get it done. And this one, I almost didn't film it. Like I really was that morning. I was like, I'm just not going to film it because, you know, it's like I'm trying to cram as much into the day as I can. Filming will take longer, whatever. So I almost didn't do it. But I saw my opportunity because my family was going out of town. I have a husband and I have two kids and they were going out of town for the weekend. And so I was like, this is my chance. Like I can literally like not eat or sleep. I can just sew. Like I don't have anyone else that's relying on me for anything. So I had all these plans and ideas of things I wanted to sew that were like building up just for me personally. And I was like, let's see how many I can get done in a day. So I just filmed the process and I very much didn't put pressure on myself to make it like highly stylized or make it any sort of like super fancy editing or anything like that. I literally was just like, these are the things I'm making. Let's see if I can get it done. And that title actually, I remember I changed it like 10 minutes into the video. Like I had posted it and I can't remember what my first title was, but I think it was just something like sewing my fall wardrobe or something. And then I changed it 10 minutes later. I was like, oh, I didn't even say anything about like, I tried to do it in one day and that's an interesting concept. And so I remember changing it and I did get a few messages from friends being like, that title's so good. Like I totally need to watch that. So yeah, I need to do more of that as well. I feel like that one's been really popular.
Yeah, there's no like crazy thumbnail or anything either. It's just like sewing vlog and like a photo of your workbench and then you standing in front of your work shed.
Yeah. Yes.
But the title really worked. Okay, so the next one is from January of this year. You drove 12,200 subscribers this year. And this is another one that like has one of these great titles that like, of course, people are going to watch this, though I don't think it has a crazy like. No, I mean, the thumbnail is pretty good, but nothing's like so crazy about it. But it's trying on my entire me-made wardrobe, patterns, fabric, and sewing stories. And so this one has 103,000 views. It's like your ninth best viewed video or something like that. But yeah, another one that seems to have driven a lot with like a really like, no way. Like that's, it's like an hour long too. And like the thumbnail is like picture, like 12 pictures of you in all these outfits or something. So what was the, how did you come up with that one?
I mean, that one's a popular like piece of content that people make. I think for sewing and for a lot of other things as well, right? If you have like a craft or whatever, people will do like my entire closet or everything I've made this year or whatever. Because it's January, you know, people are kind of taking stock of what they have, what's in their closet. And a lot of people are starting to sew also in January. It's like a New Year's resolution. So I wanted a piece of content that was very much like, here's everything that I've made and kind of trying to go as rapid fire as possible. But as you said, it's an hour. It's so long. I really had to, like, it could have been 2 hours if I didn't edit it down even more. But yeah, just showing everything that I have, because I think a lot of people are curious, like, what do I actually wear? What do I actually own? Because, you know, they see these snippets of things I make. And so it's all in place. And I use it as a really good resource for, I get questions all the time of like, where did you get this fabric? Where did you, what pattern is this that you have? So it's like, if you want to know anything about my closet, like it's all there and it's all linked. Like I have everything, like all those resources in the description. So it's a really great content piece just for people to be introduced to me, to see my wardrobe, to see everything I have, but also a great resource for me to link people to. I'm constantly like referencing it. So yeah, it's been a good one.
Okay, so the last one is interesting because I feel like this one wasn't necessarily the full driver, but this, it seems like more of a mark that now you're growing kind of without any of these like individual videos driving so much. So last month you had a spike in May, 11,900 subscribers, and your most viewed video though only has 76,000 views that was posted that month. It's just Maine is the cutest, part one, knitting, antiquing, hiking, reading, and so much brunch. So just kind of like almost a standard performance in terms of views for your videos now, but like, even as there are these spikes, like they've gotten like, you know, the first one I read was 5,400 subscribers back in June, 2024, and they keep going up. And now this one is actually slightly less than the spike in January. But it seems like you've kind of reached some sort of escape velocity. Yeah. Like you're kind of just growing more sustainably.
Yeah, definitely. I like to, in my content, especially on YouTube, to not have it so like educationally focused and informative. Like for sure there's videos like that. Like I feel like all the ones we've talked about are quite, they're teaching you something. They're giving you information about something. They're very, savable, shareable, things like that. And I like to also sprinkle in these things of just more like, this is what I'm up to. I'm going on a trip to Maine. And like, yes, I did plan, like I planned to film it. The Airbnb I picked, I did think about like, is this going to be cute in the video? Like for sure, I did think about those things. But I love following and watching people who I actually care about their lives and things they're doing and whatever. And so these trips that I take, these vlogs that I do, I feel like they aren't quite like, you know, I thrifted fabric while I was in Maine, sure. But, you know, it's kind of just like me living my life, doing my thing. And I think it helps kind of build that community aspect and that relationship with my audience. And so I do feel like I've kind of, I don't think I ever was really boxed in, but I feel like I'm firmly escaped from being like just a sewing creator and can kind of show people whatever I'm interested in. And it still makes sense on my channels.
How do you define the term creator?
Oh, I know that you ask people this. I've been listening to some of your episodes. I feel like I maybe fall a little bit outside of what some of your other guests have typically defined it as, just in that I don't put any sort of box around it in that it needs to be monetized or that it even needs to be very strategic or intentional. But it's just, if you are posting things and creating things, I think it's fair to call yourself a creator. And I know some people are also like, they don't want to say like, oh, I'm not trying, I'm not an influencer, I'm not trying that hard or whatever. Whatever people feel comfortable with, if they don't want to feel like they're trying that hard, you don't have to like define what you are. But I do think there are a lot of people who put a lot of effort and thought into the things they're posting, and they can be called creators, even if they're not making money off of it, even if they're not, like, I think the creator word, that being creative, is really what would define it. If you're being creative online on purpose, then I feel like you can be a creator.
I would tend to agree with you. One of the parts of our more formal definition, which you might know, is like anybody, like besides that part, which is the first part, what you've just said, is anybody trying to build an audience in earnest beyond their immediate friends and family. So I wanted to ask, when you first started trying to actually build an audience besides just, you know, friends and family who followed you on Instagram.
Yeah, I don't know if this counts because it was more as a business than as a me as a person, although I sprinkled my own personal stuff into it a lot. But my first Instagram, I guess, that was beyond friends and family was when I had my old business that was handmade children's clothing. So it's like a similar vein, but not quite the same as what I do now. And my husband was the one who was like, oh, you should make an Instagram for that. And this was 2015. So it was a really long time ago. The landscape is so different, right, than what it is now. And so there really weren't like corporate Instagram as much as there is now, or like business Instagram. It wasn't really as much of a thing. And so that's the first time I was like trying to speak to people that weren't just like my friends and family, right? And it was so much fun. I remember like I'd go to sleep at night and wake up and be like, 40 people followed me while I was asleep. Like, why do they even care? Like, it was so much fun. And I just like threw myself into it and didn't have any strategy. I was just kind of exploring. And I feel like I learned so much because I had that business for almost 6 years. And just by like daily trying new things, doing new things is kind of how you kind of just learn and grow on social media and Instagram, especially.
What would you say your relationship with your like audience and community is like now, especially like when you first started? There's a wonderful fluidity to how you're approaching it. You're like, oh, I kind of like this. I want to start sharing it. I want to make a business account. So when growing followers, making them into a community, how has been your approach to relating to them?
I feel like I'm not super tactical about it. Like, I'm not thinking too strategically about like, ooh, what plans should I have to relate to my audience and my community? It's just the people that follow me are people who I would want to hang out with. And I feel really lucky in that way that, I mean, I guess it makes sense that the things I'm posting are attracting people that are interested in the things I'm posting, right? So those people make sense to me. Like, I totally get them. I get what they want to see because it's what I want to see and what I want to do. And so I feel a really like a kinship with these people. And, you know, when I get DMs from them, I feel like I am chatting with friends and people I would want to hang out with. So it's not really much of a stretch or an intention around like, let me build this certain type of community. It's more just like, I'm so lucky that the things I talk about are bringing in these people who are fun and that I would want to hang out with.
That makes sense. I am also, I mean, like, When thinking about this space, one of my best friends is a fiber artist, and you also, oh, really? you guys both create similar content. And so I'm curious as to, like, for the people listening who are curious about the sewing creator landscape, I would love to hear more about, like, who is the biggest creator in the space right now and why? What do you admire about them? What makes you different from them, etc.?
Yeah, okay. I was trying to think about this of, like, who are the big creators in the sewing space, in the fiber arts, because that's another area, right? It's not just sewing. There's all sorts of artistry that's going on there. And like with all niches, I do think it's quite varied. Because there are some creators, like one that kind of came to mind was Kiana Bonolo or Benoyo. I'm not exactly sure how to say her name. She's got like, got to be over 500,000 on YouTube or on Instagram. And I know she has a YouTube channel. I'm not exactly sure how big it is, but she's quite big. But her niche is very much like Project Runway type things, like couture. She recreates like red carpet looks and has like really great content around that. Like she'll be like, let's make this Met Gala look, and then she'll kind of like redo it herself, which is very much like not what I do. It's different from what I do, but I'm sure there are people who are interested to kind of see both. So she's one person that comes to mind, even though it's kind of like a different space. But then there's some creators like From Carly B is another one. I'm not exactly sure how big her audience is, but I know she has a YouTube channel that's great, and her vibe is very like whimsical and colorful, and she does these like really big patchworky dresses, and I don't think she has like patterns or a lot of educational content, but her content is much more like come sew with me, like vlog type things. We're gonna make these fun things. She sewed her wedding dress recently. She makes couch covers.
So impressive.
It's just kind of like fun to watch, and again, like her aesthetic isn't exactly mine either, but that's just how it, you know, how it works with artists. There's all these people. But then I also think there's very much like an Instagram bubble of sewing creators who all, they make the same types of patterns, use the same kinds of fabrics. They use the same specific hashtags, even though hashtags are kind of going away on Instagram, but there's like a certain like script they follow in their captions and like ways to do things. And it's very much this like bubble, and I'm aware of it and dip my toes in it sometimes. But I feel like I'm also able to kind of look outside of that and talk to people who aren't so entrenched in this like specific sewing community on Instagram.
Are you in community with any of these people? Are there like other creators who you've met somehow through making content who you like, you know, commiserate with or like trade, you know, advice or anything with?
Yeah, definitely. Two that come to mind. So one is she's kind of like my mentor, really. When I was initially like, okay, I need to figure out how to make patterns, because I had just sewn for myself personally and my children's clothing business, but I need to figure out how to make like patterns for adults and sell them. I stumbled upon Jessica Capalbo, or Jessie Lou's Closet is her handle, and she very much focuses on sewing pattern education. Like she teaches people how to make sewing patterns, and so she's definitely a big person in that like Instagram bubble space. She has her own patterns, but also teaches people how to make patterns. But then there's also like a bazillion like smaller creators, even though they're not that small. Kelsey White is another one who comes to mind. I think she's got like 30,000 something on Instagram, but she's great. She's like a friend. We chat all the time. We like we DM and talk about things. And I don't think she has any patterns, but like she has an ebook about learning to sew. And she just is like making things for herself, posting about the things she's making. She has just a really fun like aesthetic and vibe, and like she makes my patterns, and so I get tagged in her stuff. And yeah, for sure, there's like a ton of people that I chat with, and I feel like it is a really great community on there for sure. But it can feel intimidating because it's like there's all these people making the same things, and what if I'm not as cool as them or whatever? There's definitely that.
Well, how important is it though to you to like to talk to people like this? Is it like? How important is it to your day to day, to like your coming up with ideas, to the way you approach this work?
Yeah, I feel like it is important, but I also do have a kind of a more outside view, because I think a lot of people in these communities have been either sewing for a long time, or they're kind of really into the specifics and the technical aspects of things, whereas my audience and the people that I relate to and speak to the most are either beginners, like people who have not sewn at all, who have always maybe wanted to sew and thought it looked cool, but it's just intimidating. Like the way that sewing is often taught and spoken about is very like, have to do it this way. Definitely learn this. Don't do this. Oh my gosh, that's a bad fabric to use, whatever. So it's very like, oh, I'm going to make a mistake and I'm going to do it wrong. And I feel like my approach is more just like, you'll figure it out. Like, I'll give you my tips, but you're going to be fine. And so when I'm planning my content, patterns, everything that I'm going to make, I'm not super focused on what other people are doing, or I don't collaborate so much in that way. I more just do it the way that it would make sense to me, or that I wish, the instruction and person that I wish I had when I was learning to sew, because It all just felt so intimidating.
On July 16th, four of the biggest names in the creator economy, Sean Puri, Cody Sanchez, Chris Kerner, and Tyler Denk, are coming together for the Creator Business Summit. They've built seven-figure brands, scaled audiences, and turned content into companies. And now they're breaking down exactly how they did it. Whether you are just starting out or scaling fast, this free, live, and virtual event will give you the playbook to turn your audience into a real business. Don't miss it. Visit behive.com/virtual-events to register for free. That's behive.com/virtual-events. Tell us how you view Instagram, how you view TikTok, and how you view YouTube, what your relationship with these different platforms are. Because from the outside, I'll just say quickly, it looks to me like Instagram and TikTok are almost the same for you, but then YouTube, you know, you've got the growing following there. It seems to me that YouTube is like the one you are most interested in now. But I'm saying too much. I'm putting words in your mouth. What does YouTube mean to you? What does Instagram mean to you? What does TikTok mean to you? How would you rank them?
Yeah, I think you guessed it. Right now, I am probably the most excited about YouTube. And when I have like lightning strike moments of ideas of content that I want to make, it's usually YouTube or TikTok. So when I'm planning, like I have a very organized, color-coded calendar where like I throw all my ideas on and kind of like map them out. And it's always like my ideas always lead with YouTube and TikTok. So I feel like they're kind of tied for first place. Although YouTube's a little bit more fun for me right now. TikTok second place. And then Instagram is like third place, but in my brain, it's like 50th place. It just gets all of the leftovers and kind of like, I'll repost stuff on there. I'll throw carousels up on there just because it's like, yeah, like I could kind of, whenever I feel like it, I'll post stuff on there, but I'm just not, it doesn't inspire me and I don't feel like super motivated to be on there. So I don't intentionally plan content on there much.
I'm curious about your calendar. I'm also a color-coded girly.
Yeah.
So tell me more about how like you decide what content you're going to post on YouTube versus TikTok versus like you mentioned that you post some carousels on Instagram. And I also know that you mentioned that it's kind of fluid and there's not as much strategy, but like, how does your fluidity lead you in planning which content is going to go where?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think my time at GGPIP really, like, I've always been an organizational person, a spreadsheet person, love a spreadsheet. But my time in GGPIP really solidified like content calendars because, you know, as a social media manager, you have to have a content calendar and you're working with, you know, the whole marketing team and whatever. And so we had these calendars there that, you know, anytime there's a launch or anything, you have a whole plan built out around this launch or the sale or whatever. And you have things planned for every platform and specific stories and TikTok content and whatever. So that's very much carried over into now. Like I need that visualization of any time. So like, for example, when I launch a pattern, I launched one in the very end of April. So I knew like I could see when launch day was coming up and I know that I have like my YouTube tutorial is going live that day. So I know I have that on there. And then I have like specific stories that have specific purposes of things I want to talk about and why I want to talk about them. And it's very specific as far as how many slides I'm going to have, because I know that after a certain amount of slides, you know, the viewership drops off so much, whatever. And then of course I need to post about it on Instagram and what's that going to look like. And so, I'll have that and TikTok and whatever. And then I know kind of like the aftermath of the launch. So like, okay, what's day two of the launch? What looks like, what does day three of the launch look like? And on which platforms, so that it kind of all like works within itself. Like it references other things, make sure I'm linking the tutorial onto my stories and make sure I'm referencing, like there's certain things I want to reference on my TikTok to lead people to other channels. And so they all are married and connected, but it's also mapped out individually. So obviously a pattern launch is like a big scale thing, but even smaller things like my trip to Maine, I had, you know, my YouTube videos, which are like the posts of content of like what that's going to be. But then I also had, you know, stories and Instagram posts and TikTok posts planned out that can kind of push people toward those like posts of YouTube content. Yeah.
Awesome. I love that. That does make sense. And I'm another question about the content planning. How much of it is based around, because you know, you mentioned like, I'm going to Maine and I'm picking a cute place to stay that is going to look good for the background, which is important. So how much is based around like, oh, I have this plan for what I'm going to do, and or I'm doing this weekend and I'm going to make a video about it because why not? And how much of it is based on like, maybe like sewing trends in the space or joining a discourse in the space that you're in, or just any wider trends. I'm wondering how much that shapes your planning as well.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think largely my content doesn't revolve around trends as much as far as like, I feel like the Ganni top is an example of a time where I really did kind of jump on a trend, although it's something that I actually wanted to make. I am never posting anything that I'm only posting because I think I should. Like, that's never a thought in my brain. So very rarely am I jumping on trends for those reasons. But like TikTok, I feel like is a good example with this, because there are like trending sounds, for example, that, and I never use trending sounds because it's like, well, this is trending, so I feel like I need to jump on it for views or whatever. But sometimes you see a sound and you're like, ooh, that would be great with like this sewing thing, for example. Like, are you guys on TikTok at all?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Okay. So there was this trend like a month ago. I feel like it's sort of still circling around a little bit, but there was a trend of like this. It might have been the Jaws music, or like it's some sort of like shark type thing where like it's just very like ominous and you can like hear these things. Anyway, people were doing this trend where in the frame of the TikTok video, every time there was like that ominous music or whatever, you'd see a person like walk by really fast and they're, you know, and then they'd like walk by again. And it's like just this creepy like person. And so I made a TikTok video about it. That's like, me when someone says they want to learn how to sew, and it's me just like ominously like in the background, because it's like, I'm ready to like pounce on you and like teach you everything because I'm so excited. Like, I love teaching people how to sew. So that's like kind of the vibes. So as far as that goes, like I do trends in that way, because it's like fun and exciting. And that's one reason I love TikTok, is because I feel so inspired by it and I get so many ideas there. Whereas Instagram just doesn't have as many like fun things that I'm like so excited to make.
That's so interesting. Cause like from the consumer side, looking at both, it's like, you know, scanning, it looks like it's the same videos, but you're saying that like, there's actually a feedback loop for you on TikTok, whereas like Instagram is kind of dead. And like, if you were just hanging out and scrolling on Instagram, you would have nothing, no new idea. Not that you would have no new ideas, but like there wouldn't be as much input for you.
Yeah, definitely. When I'm scrolling on Instagram, it feels like an obligation. It feels like I need to be on here. Like, I need to, as much as possible, I'm not great at this, but I need to, like, when people are tagging me and making my patterns, like they're taking time out of their day to like make something that I had a part in. And so I feel like I need to be liking it and commenting it on whatever. It feels like I need to follow up. Whereas TikTok is like just an explosion of inspiration to me, instead of like, I never feel obligated to be on there. And it's funny because that video I just talked about is a great example. I don't cross post everything, but some things I do, like I'll make it on TikTok, and if it does well, or if I like it, whatever, I'll also put it on Instagram. That video I loved. I was like, that's cute. That's a good idea. So it did like okay on TikTok initially, but I was like, I love it. I'm going to put it on Instagram. Crickets. Like, nobody cares, because it's not a trend on Instagram. And it's not like, because everybody on TikTok, they're like, oh yeah, I get it. Like, I know that sound. I see it all over the place. So like, we're in on the joke. We get it. And on Instagram, nobody knows that sound. And so everyone's like, why are you creepily walking in the background of this right. video? Like, it's weird. So it was like, it didn't do that well. But then after a few weeks on TikTok, that blew up. And I think it's close to 1 million views right now. And I've gotten tons of new followers from it, because, you know, I knew that that video is speaking to a person who like wants to learn to sew. Like, if you're thinking, I want to learn to sew, like, this video is for you. And so then they go to my profile and they're like, oh, this person actually is going to teach me how to sew. And then they follow me. So it like totally makes makes sense. I thought it was great.
Do you have like different relationships with your audience on each platform? Or rather, I guess, does your audience have different relationships with you? Like, are you getting maybe more comments on TikTok versus Instagram? Or like the comments you're getting are more like actually engaging with what you're doing? Is there a difference in the audiences that you notice? Because I will say too, the audiences are about the same size. It's 258,000 on Instagram and 243,000 on TikTok. So both are about the same size and pretty big, but are they different?
They're totally different. And it's actually really interesting because the sewing creator and like fabric companies, pattern companies, it's so like rich and saturated on Instagram. Like there's so many people on Instagram talking about that stuff. And they all, like I said, they all kind of do the same type of thing. It's like kind of a, it's like you can follow a structure. TikTok is like barren of sewing people. Well, not completely. There's definitely sewing people on there. But I personally feel like if you were going to make a SWOT analysis, TikTok is the O in SWOT analysis for sewing creators because there's so much opportunity there. And I feel like there's all these creators and like fabric companies, pattern companies who are not capitalizing on it because there's all these young people on TikTok. They're not all young, but you know, a lot of them like Gen Z type of people who they want to learn to sew. They want to make cute stuff. But it just feels right, like traditional sewing, the way that sewing is traditionally taught and spoken about is so intimidating. And so it's just like ripe for the picking. These people who like really want to learn to sew, they don't want to be in the weeds of like, this is how to make a dart the right way. They just want to like make cute stuff and not feel scared about it. And I feel like that's kind of my bread and butter is like, yeah, we're just going to make fun stuff and it's going to be fun. It's going to be chill. We're going to have a good time. We're going to make cute things. So to me, TikTok feels so, so easy because it's like, yeah, it's just people who want to make cute stuff and I can do that. So it's going to be fine. I'm shocked that there are not more sewing people on TikTok, to be honest.
Honestly, same. I was surprised to hear you say that. And it also makes me curious, like with your approach to growing on the platform and the people that you've been able to engage with, like, do you feel like you've been able to find other like more sewing creators or like, have there been more since you started or what has been the vibe there?
Yeah, it's definitely grown a lot. I mean, it's so hard because I'm also like, I may have blinders a little bit, you know, cause I'm in it. So just from my perspective, and this might not be true, but it feels to me like the last couple years, there's been a big boom in sewing creators. And especially with, like there are certain like courses that you can take to like learn how to make patterns and things like that. And I think those have gained popularity. And so there are people who see others like me and other people who are having success with like this being their full-time job. So I think there are a lot of people who see that and think like, oh, I want to do that too. And so now they're trying it out. So I definitely think it's grown. I think there's been a lot of people wanting to do it in the last couple years, but I still think even so, I think most of those people are on Instagram and they kind of have a hard time connecting to the TikTok audience as much.
On July 16th, four of the biggest names in the creator economy, Sean Puri, Cody Sanchez, Chris Kerner, and Tyler Denk, are coming together for the Creator Business Summit. They've built seven-figure brands, scaled audiences, and turned content into companies. And now they're breaking down exactly how they did it. Whether you are just starting out or scaling fast, this free, live, and virtual event will give you the playbook to turn your audience into a real business. Don't miss it. Visit behive.com/virtual-events to register for free. That's behive.com/virtual-events. We have not yet talked about this really as a business, all the ways that you make money. So I think I have them all, which are brand partnerships. You do some of these, platform revenue share, ad payouts, and sewing pattern sales. Is it just those three or is there anything else we miss?
I have a couple like affiliate channels. Like I do, I have like a, what's it called? Amazon.
Amazon storefront. Market. Right?
Yeah, Amazon storefront. I have an Amazon storefront that I link people to. And there's a couple like fabric companies that have affiliate programs, which if any fabric companies are listening, like there need to, like more people need to have them. I've talked to some of my favorite fabric companies about it because I think it would be so beneficial for them. But yeah, there are a few like fabric and like sewing companies I work with that have affiliate programs and those have been good as well.
What's like the approximate percentage breakdown of these four different things, how they compose your entire revenue?
Yeah. If it's a pie chart, Honestly, about 85% of it is pattern sales. And that fluctuates a little bit. Like obviously in a month where I launch a pattern or something, it would be much higher. Like it would probably be like 99% for that month is pattern sales. But then there are months where I don't push my patterns as much and I'm like more focused on YouTube, more focused on content and things like that. And that'll jump up. Or if I have a partnership, the percentages might change a bit. But for the most part, pattern sales is the majority of my income, and it's nice because it is passive. So I'm not having to, constantly be sewing dresses anymore.
Well, that's kind of your dream, right? Isn't that kind of the goal that you want to be a sewing business first rather than a creator first, correct?
Yeah. And it fluctuates. This is like the thing I love about my job so much is that I kind of have these two different areas that I can focus on. Like sometimes I'm feeling really passionate and motivated about a specific pattern that I want to make. And so I throw all my time into that, really focus on that and do like a little bit of content sprinkled on the side. And then there are other times where I'm so burnt out sewing, I like can't look at a bobbin anymore. And I just focus on YouTube, or maybe I'll go on a trip to Maine or something like that and do more content side of things. And so I can kind of go back and forth to what I'm feeling like passionate and excited about at the moment. Like my first three patterns, I launched one in November and then December and then March. And so they were all like really close together. And you might not have the context of that, but like patterns are like, it's a lot of work and it's a lot of like tons and tons of time. And so for those first three patterns, I was like killing myself to get them out there. And then once they were there and things were kind of churning, I could kind of sit back a little bit more. Once you're done with the pattern, it is like, I feel so overwhelmed that I need a break. So it's nice that I'm able to kind of shift between focuses.
Are there any like similarities or like very marked differences between the creative process for, let's say, a longer, more in-depth video versus a pattern? Like, are there other patterns perhaps between your creative process for making media and making patterns?
Yeah, I feel like they're actually quite different. And it's sort of a difference of like left brain, right brain a little bit. And I think this is something that a lot of creators probably have to grapple with is like, are you more creative or more analytical? Because it is like a blend of the two for sure. And I feel like I've always been quite in the middle. Like I feel like I have both and can like access both. But there are a lot of sewing creators who maybe are more creative driven and don't have that like analytical side, or, you know, maybe vice versa. Because in creating a pattern, when you're actually making the pattern, I do feel like it's quite technical and quite analytical, especially like my history of learning to sew and things like that was very much like, go with the flow, make it up. You know, like I'm tracing things, I'm guessing, whatever. That's kind of the way I learned to sew. But when I'm making an actual pattern, I am like to the millimeter, like doing all this math and then like writing the instructions. You have to word everything perfectly. And it's like so technical and exact. And then with content, it's much more, at least for me, it's much more like go with the flow. And like, yeah, there's a lot of planning, like talk about my color coordinated calendar. There's a lot of that just because of who I am as a person. But for the most part, it's very go with the flow. And like in the ideation process, I might be a little bit more like planny and specific-y. But then when it comes down to it, I'm just like, whatever, like on the day, it's very much like, maybe I won't film this anymore. Or like, I'll be doing something and in the moment, I'll be like, oh, this would be a good TikTok. And it's very wishy-washy. Whereas the patterns that I make, I'm not wishy-washy at all. I'm like zoned in.
I'm really curious, like both of these two are very time consuming things. You just described that patterns are very time consuming and content is also in its own way very time consuming. How have you made it so that it's like sustainable for you, especially starting out? I'm curious how you decided like, oh, I can do this. Like, because I know you started out more like, oh, I'm going to make content and like see what happens. But what are steps that you've taken to kind of like, all right, this is all taking a lot. You also have a family, you have children. So it's like, how have you designed your life to you know, be sustainable for you?
Yeah, that's a question I get a lot is like how I think it looks like I mean, I do a lot of things, but I think from the outside, it does look like I'm constantly doing things. And so that's a question I get a lot. And it has truly taken me, it's been 11 years from like when I started my first business and have been doing, you know, some sort of what I'm doing now for that long. It's really taken me like 10 plus years to find that balance and to like figure out how to do it without, with maintaining my like sanity. Like truly when I was at the peak of my children's clothing business, I was in a bad place, like mentally, like things were just really chaotic. And so it's taken me a long time to figure out, how to do it all. And I'm very grateful that the way that I've set up my business now, it's largely passive income, right? And like, I'm constantly like pushing things and talking about things, but it is all based on what I want to be doing and what I'm passionate about and what I'm excited about. I never am doing anything out of obligation or anything that's like, oh, I feel like I should do this, or like, oh, I need to do this many patterns a year, or I need to have this many YouTube videos. It is all just like whatever I'm excited about and passionate about, I just like run toward that thing. And I, because I love working, it all kind of balances out and has been quite successful. But yeah, I just never put pressure on myself to do something that I don't want to do, which I'm very privileged to be able to do that.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm so glad to hear that. And I'm also like in the same vein of like you building this up to where it is. I would love to chat about your Discord Sewing Besties, because I think present the vibe of a sewing bestie. You've talked a lot about making sure that your content is accessible to people who are learning how to sew. And I think that that's really cool, because you're making a niche product, but it's still very much accessible to people who are not in the space if they are interested in learning more about sewing. So with your Discord, how did you decide to start one?
Yeah, this is, I think, flows really well with the last question, because my Discord is, I hesitate to even call it my Discord. It's like run by the people, really. Like I'm very rarely in there. I like peek at it every once in a while. But the reason it came about was because, you know, there's all these people who are learning to sew and getting into it because of whatever content they've seen from me, patterns they've seen from me, whatever. And they feel like they're the only person, like they don't have in real life friends and family members and a grandma to teach them and things like that. And like, I've been there. Like, I know how it is to feel like I want to learn to sew. I want to make cute things, but I literally don't. I even now have basically no friends who sew in real life. Like nobody I actually know. My sister-in-law was just telling me that she was going to like learn to sew and make one of my patterns. And I was so excited because I never talked to real life people about this. But yeah, I know how that feels and I get it. And so I made a Discord hoping that all of these like lone sheep could find each other and like be in community with each other, because they're all like the same type of people, you know? And I was very like upfront and realistic about it, even in like, you know, when you get into the server, there's like, these are the rules, whatever. And in that I'm like, I'm here, but like, this is you guys. Like, I don't have the time. Like, I just want to be super honest. I don't have the time to be like chatting with you guys, answering your questions. If you have like a specific, like sewing technical question, like I'm not going to be in here to answer it for you guys. So this is you guys. You guys have fun, chat with each other, be best friends, but like, I can't be super involved. And so I think it's gone well. Like every time I check back in, people are like chatting and having fun and whatever, but I know that if I had put the pressure on myself to be super involved, it would turn into something that I am not passionate about or happy with.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, taking a peek at it a couple of times, like there seems to be a really engaged community. There's many channels, there's people sharing patterns. So I feel like it's doing what you would like it to do. And I feel like a lot of people that we've spoken to on this show who have Discords are usually like, I'm just going to fall back and be a facilitator and just kind of like make the space for people to come and talk about this thing that we're all kind of obsessed with. Yeah. So that's great.
Yeah. And I was so scared at the beginning, because like, you know, I feel like the reputation that like Facebook groups and things have is that it's just like a bunch of people fighting. And I was so scared. I think I even said in like the welcome message, I was like, if you guys like, don't test me. If you guys fight on this, I'm taking it down. Like I'm not tolerating any nonsense. And so far, as I've seen, it's been really positive. So I'm happy with it.
Wait, that's interesting. You said that you would take it, not that you would kick them out or something, but yeah. Like the whole thing is coming down. I like the kind of more communal accountability that has.
Yeah, I mean, well, we'd see. I guess I was just scared that it would literally be like everybody fighting. So I suppose if it was just like a rogue person being a jerk, then yeah, I'd probably just kick them out. But I really don't have qualms about shutting things down. And I feel like that's one lesson I learned, even though it's slightly different. That's one lesson I learned about when I closed my whole clothing business down. In that moment, like at the time, I felt like a failure, but I feel like it taught me such a good lesson of like, yeah, you can just quit something. Like you can just stop doing something. And I really am not scared. Like when the TikTok ban was going to happen, I wasn't like super stressed about it because I know that like eventually you'll find something else to do. And you'll like, I think I've learned for myself, no matter kind of like what happens and what direction I want to go in, like I'm going to land on my feet and it's going to be fine. So yeah, if I have to shut down the Discord server, sorry, if I am just going to like randomly leave YouTube one day and never come back, it'll be fine. I'm like not super attached or concerned about any one platform.
Mm-hmm. Going back to the monetization briefly. So brand partnerships, one of your most watched Instagram reels of all time, and definitely recently, is a partnership with Hatch Sleep. It currently has 1.8 million views. And I'm guessing that it says the paid partnership thing on it. So I'm guessing they put money behind it as an ad too. But tell us about how you approach brand partnerships. And if you've done, I couldn't find so many of them. But yeah, tell us about this as a revenue channel for you, brand partnerships.
Yeah. Yeah, I do a few of them. I'm very particular about who I work with, both in making sure that the brand and product makes sense for me, that it's something that's totally not out of left field, and that the people, like the team on the brand, like the marketing people or whatever, are like people I want to work with. And I think I'm in a kind of unique position where for me, a brand partnership isn't just like making a video or posting some pictures with like a drink or whatever, which not to minimize like influencers' work or anything like that. Like that's 100% work. And that's not what I mean at all. It's more just that for me, making content for brands often also involves creating a garment or like making a product too. And so that's part of the work. And especially in times, like I did a collaboration with Spoonflower, which is a fabric company. I mean, they do fabric and wallpaper. It's all like custom print stuff. And so they came to me about specifically making a like patchwork quilted garment. And if you know anything about fiber arts or anything, quilting and patchwork things take way longer because not only are you like, it was a vest that I was going to make. Not only am I making this vest, but I have to make the fabric for it because I'm piecing together all these other fabrics to make, you know, the larger thing. And so I was super upfront with them and just told them like, yeah, we can do that. But then it's, you know, it's going to take me like 7 days to make the thing. And that's not even that's not even the content. Like the content then is going to take me time to edit and whatever. So for me, I value my time so highly because not only do these projects take me a really long time because it's so much more involved than just posting a product, but also because I have my own products and patterns and things like that to work on, that if I take a week or 2 weeks to work, you know, for a brand and do a partnership for a brand, that's taking 2 weeks of time away that I could have been working on a pattern. So I do value my time super highly and am very particular with the brands I work with for those reasons. So yeah, usually it doesn't work out, which is like the budget that I would request is like, doesn't work with most brands. And like, that's completely fair, but I don't want to diminish my work either.
What was the first brand partnership you remember doing and how did that come about?
My first big brand partnership must have been Spoonflower because, you know, I get inbound stuff all the time. And I usually just say no, or when I say yeah, but then, you know, you have to pay me this much, then they say no, which again is totally fair. I think Spoonflower was the first one where it made sense. Like, yes, this product makes sense. This brand makes sense. You guys are like, you value my time as well. So we're good. We're going to go ahead and do that. I think that Spoonflower was the first one. And I've really only done 3 or 4 of them. And I'm fine with that. I don't love doing them either. Like, I mean, I've loved the ones that I've done, But just as a revenue stream, it's not something that I'm like, oh yeah, got to do more of those. Those are awesome. You know, it's more just like, if it works, it works.
Amazing. If you could give any advice to a creator starting out in the space or any creator who's like kind of like pursuing a niche of their own and wants to turn it into a business, what would you tell them?
Yeah, this is a question I get a lot too. I think my two things for being a creator specifically, like so social media type stuff, are define your goals and define your audience. And by define your goals, I mean, I think a lot of people, when they think about social media, the goal is just to like have as big of a platform as possible, just have as many followers as you can get. And I personally feel like that is not the goal for everybody and can be detrimental as well. Because, right, like if my goal was just get as many followers as possible, make your YouTube videos have as many views as possible, I feel like I wouldn't be staying true to like who I was. Like even you were saying, these YouTube videos where I've had spikes, it's not like the thumbnail was crazy, right? Like it's not me being like, ooh, like pointing to something, you know, and like, that's just like not who I am. And yeah, maybe if I just wanted like 50 million views on something, I would do something scandalous and it would be like clickbaity and whatever. But that's just not my vibe. And so in defining your goal, decide what you actually want. And for some businesses, especially like on Instagram, it's okay for your goal to be like, my goal for Instagram is that I have a corner of the internet where people can get a sense of who I am. So, because I think a lot of younger generation, especially when they're looking for a clothing company or a business or maybe even like a pet groomer or something like that, you might search them on Instagram before you Google them. And so it's totally fine for you to have an Instagram that's just like a profile of like, this is who you are. And you have some content pieces that kind of like define you as a business, but you don't need to want every single post to go viral. Like that doesn't have to be your goal.
I always say it's okay to just make a business card account.
Yeah, totally. Like it can just be like a business card online. So define what your goal is. It's okay if it's kind of small scale. And then in defining your audience, I feel like because I've been doing this for so long, I have a real like intuition that has been learned for who I'm talking to for every piece of content that I'm making. Like I know exactly who that's going to reach. And I'm very intentional, like that, like shark TikTok that I talked about. Like I know exactly it's for the people who have always thought, gosh, I want to learn how to sew, but I don't really know how to go about that. Because that was me. That was me like 12 years ago. That's exactly what I was thinking. And so I feel like I know when I'm talking to those people, or I know when I'm talking to people who do sew all the time, but are looking for maybe a different type of, a different type of pattern, or people who know how to sew, but want to make the Ganni top. Like, you know, I feel like I always kind of know who I'm talking to, both broadly and specifically with each piece of content, because I think a lot of times people make a video or whatever, and their idea is like, oh, I wonder who this is going to reach. Like, I wonder who's going to care about this, or like, I hope people care about this. And I think you just need to be thinking more specific about like, know exactly who are you talking to and what do you want them to know about you?
Perfect. I think that's a great place to leave it. Thank you for coming on. Know who you're talking to. All right. Where should people go to find your work?
You can go to my YouTube channel, which I think everywhere that I am is Hi Sid Graham is usually my handle. So YouTube, TikTok, as I've said, those are my favorites. I'm on Instagram. You can definitely find me there as well.
Perfect. Well, thank you for joining us. And listener, we will see you next week.